When was your last checkup? No, not you. Although that's important, too. But when was your last vehicle checkup? When it comes to service, nobody knows your Chevy better than your local Chevy dealer. Chevy Drive Chicago. Schedule a service appointment at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN, and I'm about to fangirl. So every year, what I do is I interview at least once over the course of the year, most often several times, the president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. This time around, I know the president, but I don't. I know her because she's on TikTok. She is on social media. She is today's president, Dr. Jennifer Quammen, who began her veterinary career, interestingly enough, as a veterinary technician, something I will talk about with Dr. Quammen. She earned a master's degree in public health from the University of Iowa, then graduated from The Ohio State University College of Veterinary Medicine in 2011. Veterinary Technician Week is coming up not too far away, October 18th through the 24th, by the way, and we'll talk about that. Dr. Quammen, you also are an alum of the AVMA Future Leaders Program, but here you are today, not in the future. You are a leader right now. Congratulations on being president.
Oh, thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate that a lot. And I don't think I've heard all of those letters and alphabet soup about me in one succinct intro quite like that, but thank you.
Well, you know, I've got a couple of questions for you. First of all,
sure.
AVMA president, you said, I want to do this. I know that. You told everybody that on your TikTok page, which makes it very official. Why go after being president of the American Veterinary Medical Association? And what does that mean?
It's a very good question. And I would say if we step back and look at what does the president role look like and mean, I think that's part of it. And we can dive into that. But for me, during the campaigning year, because it is an entire year, it's not like you wake up one day and say, I'm going to be AVMA president. It was a challenging year, and it's a lot of introspection and a lot of questions that come. But for myself as an individual, I wanted to share that journey. For me, no matter whether I won the candidacy and got into president-elect role or not, I wanted others to see what that's like. Because I don't think the larger AVMA membership and maybe the larger general public understands the organization from that perspective. And so for me, I am really, I think, okay at just getting on and saying something on socials and sharing a funny video. And that was the audience that I wanted to make sure saw that journey. I wish I was a great journaler. I'm not. And so because I was able to write some blogs and do some video and things of that nature, that was my way to time capsule the journey as a candidate. I time capsuled as president-elect, and I hope to continue to do that over this next year as well. So thanks for anybody that's watching me there. I hope there's value. I will always take the feedback because I'm always learning. And I appreciate the fact that I have a fangirl because I'm also fangirling over Groucho. So let's be
That's our cat who's on TikTok, Groucho underscore the funny cat. And I will tell you, you are on TikTok so often, but not only on TikTok, I think I got you on my toaster oven the other day. I mean, you're everywhere. It's amazing.
I will sometimes go somewhere right now and somebody's like, I know you. And I'm like, yeah, my face is kind of everywhere right now. And some of that is my own pieces that I'm doing to put out there. But some of that is what the work that the AVMA staff is doing, because there is an entire team that helps prop me up and helps to put the president in a position where we get to advocate for the profession overall. We are the voice and the face and sort of the chief cheerleader in charge, if you will, of veterinarians across this country. And I'm really proud, honored, and privileged to be able to serve in that capacity.
Yeah, but while I fangirl you, you should know that in a few minutes, I'm going to ask you some tough questions about, for example, the cost of veterinary medicine. But before we get there, I want to hear more about your story. So you're a veterinary technician, and I believe, and you should know, you may or may not know this, when I speak at veterinary conferences or conferences or events that are veterinary related in any way whatsoever, the first thing I do is ask, are there any credentialed technicians in the room? And I see some hands raised, generally, sometimes even half the room or more, depending on where I'm speaking. And then I give like a 3-minute talk to thank the technicians who I believe are the backbone of veterinary medicine, who go unheralded very often by the general public, very often by the profession itself. And that has to change. But I think that technicians are the backbone of this industry in a way that pet owners sometimes don't know about. And I'm curious about how you think about this.
Veterinary technicians are near and dear to my heart, clearly. And you and I have a veterinarian colleague in common who we both fangirl over a little bit that we may shout out, who was a veterinary technician before becoming a veterinarian, much like myself as well. I think the value in veterinary technicians cannot be underscored. And I think that there is a little bit of a challenge that we have as practitioners, as an association, of describing what veterinary technicians and our veterinary technologists do. So because they as technicians, and I guess I would put me in there still, I still want to wee myself there, that we are radiologists, we are lab technicians, we are holding hands with pet owners, we're doing all these things. And so it can be a little complicated to just sum up what does the technician do. And that looks different if you're in a large animal practice or you're in a laboratory setting or you're working in a small animal practice. So it is a really, really diverse, challenging, and wonderful career. And I, like you, want to continue to herald that veterinary technicians, technologists make veterinary medicine wonderful. I could not do my job without technicians, without assistants, without front desk team. There's no way. This is not, we're not in the days of a one-man band as a veterinarian anymore. This is a fully developed team, and nothing makes me happier than when I'm in a place where I see the technicians utilized and they ask, hey, can I go have this conversation with this owner? Because they do such a great job educating our owners about so many medical topics.
Okay, so you said some things that there I need to follow up on. First of all, the veterinarian you're speaking about, who was once a technician like yourself, I believe, is Dr. Janet Donlan. Who's incredible in so many different ways. You know, you said veterinary technician, I think you used the word communicate. I think technicians are the primary communicators in veterinary medicine.
I think, so there are a lot of communicators in veterinary medicine. Again, I have a bias, and I suspect your audience has a bias towards dog and cat. And so if I'm framing this in a dog and cat sort of pet perspective, I do think our veterinary technicians are doing a lot of the communication in a threefold way. They are doing that to our pet owners. They are doing that with the pets and back to the veterinarians, right, and the rest of the team. So they are multilingual in a multitude of ways, if that makes sense, at least from my perspective.
Uh-huh. It is. And I want to know more. I want to talk more about veterinary technicians. And yes, when we come back, we'll talk about the increasing cost of veterinary medicine. Is Wall Street taking over veterinary medicine? We'll talk about all that and more with the president of the American Veterinary Medical Association, Dr. Jennifer Quammen. She is the president of the American Veterinary Medical Association, probably a secret service around her right now as we speak, Dr. Jennifer Quammen. Dr. Quammen, there is a movement, as we were talking about veterinary technicians, it passed, it's now law in one state. It's confusing to me as to exactly what the law is and how it's going to shake out, but essentially there'll be a third individual. So it's not only a veterinary technician, it's not only the veterinarian, that there's some sort of in-between that will begin to exist with not a lot of training, actually, in Colorado. And the idea is that I guess more clients can be seen this way, but I'm among those who pushed back on it, and I know the American Veterinary Medical Association did as well. And one of the many reasons why I push back against this, and you could describe what I'm talking about better than I can, I believe, but one of the reasons why I push back against this is because I felt let's utilize technicians to the full extent of their license. And one of the quote-unquote complaints and surveys from technicians is, and you just mentioned this, you alluded to it earlier, that I'm not being utilized to the extent that I can be. So can you talk about what the heck it is I'm talking about?
I love the cloak and dagger vibe. Yes, so what we're talking about is in Colorado, there was a ballot initiative passed to create something called a veterinary professional associate, or a VPA, which is intended to be something akin to sort of a mid-level position. From the AVMA's perspective, we take direction from our House of Delegates, which is our member organizations across all the states of this country, Puerto Rico, D.C., and other groups. And the challenge that I think is meant to be addressed by this is, in fact, from my perspective, not being addressed by what's been developed. And there are, to your point, there are still some nuances of what this is going to look like. There's one program where this is developed. But I would also push back and say that every potential niche that has been discussed to be solved by this mid-level position is, in fact, already able to be solved by our veterinary technicians and our veterinary technician specialists. So there are veterinarians and there are technicians who are also more specialty trained. There are veterinary technicians who work only in anesthesia. There are veterinary technicians that work in clinical pathology, which is like blood work. And so those are areas that we already have the expertise. We already have the training and development for those individuals. They may just not be getting utilized in those practices. And so my argument and association is that we are making something and we're developing something that we actually already have a solution to. And so I would triple down on our veterinary technicians and say, this is the solution that already exists in front of us. Get our technicians into practices, get them into laboratories, get them into research, get them working at the top of their training, and that will solve some of the challenges that are already being developed or are meant to be addressed by this position.
And this could actually, now you're paying an extra person, you're paying that person mm-hmm. more than technicians, which I suggest are underpaid as it is, and who's going to ultimately pay the cost for that? It is the client. So I want to talk about that, too. Wall Street seems to be taking over veterinary medicine. This is what people want me to ask you about. So here I go. The cost of veterinary medicine has gone through the roof, exceeding inflation by up to perhaps 90% over the past 6 years. Since 2020, veterinary service prices have increased about half, about 50%. Well, overall inflation has been about 26%, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. So this isn't just pulling numbers out of my head. In other words, veterinary inflation it's a real thing, and it's nearly twice the overall inflation. Now, a lot of reasons for this, and it's a complicated issue that isn't, you know, I've read some things about it, and it seems to be made simple, but it's not so simple, but still, I need to talk to you about that because people, especially during the pandemic, the good news is people went to shelters and they helped to clear those shelters. So now there are more multi-pet homes than ever before. People who have pets who had never had pets, in some cases because they previously couldn't afford pets. But now affordability, there's that word again, is an issue. And one reason, among many others, as to why people are relinquishing animals. So with all of that, can you comment?
I suspect you want like a 20-second response to that.
No.
No,
you have time.
So a very, very complicated issue. And to your wonderful setup, it's not an easy solution in terms of like, here's the response and here's the cause and effect. We do know that there are lots of advancements in what is happening in veterinary medicine, right? You've probably been in practices now that offer more advanced testing than once was available. And we know that in general, cost has gone up overall. That is happening in all healthcare sectors, and veterinary medicine is affected by that, including our medications and supplies and labor. All of those are factors. And I would say what is really important for your audience to know, and I want to drive home one thing, but then I also want to come back and talk about our technicians and what we were speaking of before, is that veterinarians, most of us, are pet owners, farm owners, we have livestock, we have animals that we care for as well, and we want to have these conversations with our pet owners. So if there is a need for a discussion around price, be upfront and have that conversation. We did not come to this to only, you know, be dealing with certain animals. We want to help animals. We want to honor that human-animal bond. And if you are able to have that conversation with your pet owner or your veterinarian up front, that is a way more collaborative way that we can all work together and talk about costs overall. There are also things one can think of in terms of preventive care is always the less expensive route in terms of getting those regular vaccinations, getting those preventative examinations, evaluating your pet's weight, dental health, all of those things we can do a much better job of preventing rather than treating them when they become emergent. There's also tons of ways folks can learn how to pay. And so I would say we could probably spend a four-part episode only talking about this. But if I were to put a pin in it, again, veterinarians are pet owners too. We are people. We are experiencing the same general inflation that our pet owners are. We want to have these conversations. We want to find a solution that is right for that animal and that entire family. And that involves us discussing that, which we're happy to do.
Fair enough.
If I zoom back then and talk about our technicians and where we went with the conversation around this VPA or this veterinary professional associate, there is this argument, right, that individual is going to be able to see the patients and maybe give them the medications that they might naturally now be seeing their veterinarian for. But indeed, the prescribing rules of medications in this country are set at a federal level. And federally, that requires a veterinarian. And so if one pet owner thinks that they are going to see a mid-level position and get a medication, that is unlikely to be able to happen because that is federal law that would have to be changed. So I just want to make sure folks are walking in eyes wide open. Should they be in Colorado or anywhere that might be seeing one of those positions, I want people to understand the difference there between a credentialed veterinary technician working under the guidance of a veterinarian and a veterinarian and what we are able to do medically, surgically, all of those things on behalf of those pets.
All right. That's an excellent point. Dr. Jennifer Quammen, president of the AVMA. We'll be right back.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN, talking with the president of the American Veterinary Medical Association, Dr. Jennifer Quammen. Dr. Quammen, we're talking about the cost of veterinary medicine, having a very serious conversation. And you brought up a very good point, that mid-level practitioner, which is now, to my knowledge, only in Colorado, but I know other states are looking at this, would potentially create all sorts of other issues. And one, I can't imagine, you're in the middle of surgery here, and those people are being taught, and some say not taught in the same way as they could or should be. I will leave that alone for now. And a change in anesthetic is needed right there. Unless there is also a veterinarian in the room, it's not going to happen. So this entire issue is fraught with problems that to a great degree we just don't have time to go into today. But should your state, and to my knowledge, our state, Illinois, has not looked at it, and I'm glad they have not, because this is really disconcerting to me, and it's not a simple topic, as the topic of the cost of veterinary care. So private equity is kind of, some say taking over veterinary medicine, but that might be an overstatement, but it's certainly significant. We've had U.S. senators even talking about this issue because they are pet owners too. And today, about 30 to 35% of companion animal veterinary practices are owned by corporate groups. About 75% of emergency and specialty practices. Now, I'm going to ask you the downside of this. And if one of the downsides is that is one of the reasons why it's costing pet owners just more money and or not getting the same sort of feel good feeling that you got when you walked into a practice and the owner of that practice was someone you might have known for 30 years through all sorts of different pets. and had a warm and fuzzy relationship with that person. I sure hope that doesn't go away.
I agree. I don't want that to go away. And veterinarians, again, we think about our veterinarian and client-patient relationship. We oftentimes know that animal, know that family, and have known them for years. If we're going to talk about different practice owner models, and there are a lot of them, from the AVMA's perspective, we represent veterinarians in every facet of the profession you could imagine. And so our focus is really going to continue to be on talking about the relationship with veterinarians and pet owners, talking about the trust that's built there. We're always going to want to do our best in partnership with our pet owners to deliver that affordable quality care. Costs, as we mentioned before, are influenced by so many things. And if I had the clear black and white answer, I would give that to you. And what I would say is there is a lot of data being collected. We are tracking these things, but there's not a clear answer in terms of a pro-con here. We as an association, and I as the president of this association, will stand by my veterinarian colleagues and say, we value the human-animal bond. That is why we're here. That is why we came to this profession. That is why we go to work every day. And I hope that pet owners recognize that in us. And now, does everybody have a perfect day and every relationship is perfect? Nope. But I also think that on the whole, veterinary medicine is still a highly caring, highly trusted industry, and we want to continue to do what's right for those animals that are in front of us and the ones that we're fortunate enough to be able to see and visit and develop those relationships with every day.
And there's another side of that coin. And one side is that sometimes when these corporates, for lack of a better way of saying it, take over, it may be in a part a practice that's failing. And maybe there's not even another practice nearby. That really does happen. Another thing that happens is now you've got this practice that the company owns 200 practices. They can afford maybe equipment that private practitioner, individually owned, wasn't able to afford. So there are other sides of this too. And you mentioned this, but I don't want this to just slide by. Veterinary medicine today can do so much more than even just 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But with technology comes an expense in any sort of medicine, whether it be for ophthalmology. I just saw my eye doctor. That's why I think of it. I swear my eyes are still dilated, and that was a day ago. But nevertheless, it is technology that is cutting edge, and that does cost the veterinarian money. And therefore, of course, that to some extent is going to be passed on to the person. But the good news is we can now solve problems that we weren't, or diseases that we weren't able to. And the other thing is wellness plans are becoming increasingly available. And I'm curious about how you feel about everything I said, including those wellness plans.
Well, I think the thing that interests me the most to dive into is always thinking about the technology and where medicine is now. And, you know, I lived one life as a credentialed technician and live another nice life now as a veterinarian. And I think about things that I was trained on and learned on oh so many years ago and things that are still I'm learning about every day. And that's the beauty of vet med is that we're scientists. We love data. We're learning every single day. And so I think there's a lot of value in thinking about what those advanced techniques are. Our pets are living longer. And that is great news from my perspective. And we can do things to do earlier diagnostic testing to see if we can identify diseases early. And there are still opportunities for veterinarians to be those mom and pop practice owners. And there are plenty of folks that do that. So again, we're not going to advocate for one model over another. I think pet owners need to talk to their veterinarians, find that person that fits them. You've probably, like Steve, had the same experience as me of meeting a new doctor for yourself and thinking, is this the relationship that's going to be right for me? I think my dentist is one that took me a long time to find the right person. And so veterinarians are the same way. You can have that back and forth discussion of we're learning if this is the right fit for us. And there is, I would argue, a fit for every pet owner out there. And there's a fit for every veterinarian out there as well. And none of them are going to look the same. I love the diversity of what we have in this profession among ourselves and among our pets we see. There's so many cool things about vet med. I could fangirl about vet med for hours.
All right. We don't have hours in this segment. We have less than a minute. But in less than a minute, what is it about the challenges today we're talking about that the public might not appreciate?
Oh, wow. I think we all can be in a big hurry to get everything done yesterday. And I think we all just need to take a moment to give each other a little bit of grace, ask the question. This is something that's been really important to me in this leadership role, is not just making all of the assumptions that I have and putting those in, but taking just a moment to step back and ask one more question to help me understand this. And I think that is an argument for our veterinarians, for our pet owners, for you and I, it's for all of us. Rather than being so reactionary, to step back and say, how can I help to truly understand the depth of this conversation and make the best and most valuable decisions moving ahead? So that, to me, I think is really important.
When we come back with Dr. Jennifer Quammen, we'll talk about AI, but we'll also talk about, Dr. Quammen, what you do. And that is, among other things, you communicate with pet parents, for example, about dogs and hot cars and algal blooms and all those things, which we'll talk about when we come back on WGN. Here she is, the president of the American Veterinary Medical Association, Dr. Jennifer Quammen. And we are talking about the cost of veterinary medicine and other topics. I want to talk about AI. So because of the cost of veterinary medicine, or maybe convenience, or just because we do it because we're in the habit of doing it now, you go to ChatGPT or wherever you get your AI and say, my dog is limping. And then you get the answer. Well, is that answer always the right answer?
Well, I would say no, that is not always the right answer. And maybe even rarely is it the right answer, which is concerning, right? So there's a lot that we can think about in terms of AI and all the information that's out there for us. You know, we've had several sort of technology revolutions in this world. And I think that, you know, the internet coming online was one of those. And I think AI is another place where things are really, really changing. And there are tools that in a veterinarian's hand can be very valuable. There are tools in a pet owner's hand that can be very valuable. And we all need to go in those with understanding the expectation of what can this machine truly do. It's a tool. It's not a replacement for the human touch. It's not a replacement for a veterinarian. And it is something that we all just need to be constantly learning. Because for many of us, this is probably not something we had on our bingo card and thought was going to be coming into our life. I don't know. Did you have that on your bingo card 10 years ago?
No, I didn't even have a bingo card 10 years ago. And if I had it,
won a bingo then.
I've never won a bingo, actually. I did go to somewhere. Okay. We went somewhere, and it was this bingo game. My brother-in-law, my sister, and my sister and my wife went. And so it's four cards. You're each allowed two cards for some games or whatever. None of us won anything. So, but my aunt is really good at it sometimes. All right.
So it was one experience. Maybe you have to try bingo again. Maybe you got to get back to bingo.
Okay, so that's the thing I've got to do with you. So with other AVMA...
We are going to do bingo together, yes.
Yeah, with other AVMA presidents, it's meet at the bar. Let's have a drink. No, with you, it's play bingo. All right, so...
Bingo. I love it.
I want to talk about algae blooms or algal blooms. And you recently wrote about this topic. Explain what they are. Explain what we need to be careful of with a dog.
Well, there are, in the summer, when it gets a little bit warm, there are algae that can develop in our ponds and things, and they look beautiful, but there are, in some of those scenarios, some chemicals that are produced naturally by the algae that can be dangerous for our pets. So there are toxic algal blooms, which it sounds like a crazy sci-fi headline, but is in fact true. And so if you can, obviously, you have pet owners that are listening from all around the country and beyond, this could be very based on your geographic location. And so I would be looking right where you are and where your pet might go. Is there evidence of this? And are those blooms happening? Usually that will make your local news if that is happening. And the best thing we can do is keep our pets out of those waterways when that is the scenario, not have them drinking that water and exposed to it. So I'm always going to advocate for people getting their pets out for exercise if it's safe. And I think swimming for some of our breeds is wonderful, but we need to be very careful about what that looks like if there is a scenario of a bloom happening, because we don't want them eating or drinking that water because there could be toxins in there, including for their liver.
Yeah, and these toxins, to be clear, can be deadly. You also talked about leaving dogs in hot cars. And, you know, I've been doing this for years and talking thank you. And I've been talking about this issue, but, think things get better, and they really haven't very much. And each and every year, including this year, there's a count of how many dogs we know have died in hot cars. But those are only the dogs we know about, you know. And I would think, Dr. Quammen, that very few people go out and say, you know, I don't mind if my dog dies in the hot car. They just don't realize it gets that hot that quickly, or they roll down a window and they think that'll do the trick. And they also don't understand that if you're hot, odds are your dog is a lot hotter than you are.
Yeah, it is a very scary scenario, and I would love to be in a world where we never have to have this conversation again, but we're not there. And so, again, part of my job as president is to advocate and educate the general public as much as I can. And so leaving pets in cars is not safe. And even on days when it is, you know, presumably comfortable, the temperature can rise in those cars by 20, 30 degrees in less than 30 minutes. And so very hot, very quickly. Dogs and cats can't sweat in quite the same way that we as humans are. And so they cool themselves through panting, right? Maybe across the pads of their feet. And so if it is just you think it's going to be a quick stop and you're going to go in and out, I would advocate for not doing that. It is never safe to leave those pets unattended in the car. And the one thing I think that's maybe newer for folks that they haven't thought about is we have a lot of these cars now who will automatically turn off after a period of time in idle. And so, again, if you have developed that habit, if you've thought about it, we really, really want to encourage you not to do that, because those cars could turn off, again, without you there. And then that gets even warmer quicker, and we do see animals and even people with kids sometimes. And to your point, I don't think anybody is going out and saying, this is what is on my plan for today. They are accidents. They are awful when they happen. And we just really need to be thinking about the situation we're at, if we're going to travel with our pets at all, what the plan is, and what the backup plan is.
In this conversation we've had, and this is the first one I've had on the radio with you, I think the number is four times, if I'm counting right, that you mentioned the human-animal bond. Is there anything more important to the profession or to you personally than the human-animal bond?
That is a wonderful question. As I sit here with my dog at my feet and my cat secretly judging me from his cat tree, maybe not so secretly judging me, I think for me, it is my livelihood. It is the reason I get up in the morning. And I just, even if you're not involved in veterinary medicine as a profession, it is such a joy and such a wonderful thing to see an animal and a human interact. And honoring that bond is so critically important. And you asked that question and I just lit up with a smile, right? Like, I can think of no other thing to talk about and just bring the joy of vet med than that. And if I could, I would love to prop you up a little bit in terms of how much you have done to continue to support that human-animal bond, to continue to be an advocate for veterinarians and for AVMA. And so thank you, Steve. We really appreciate and value the long-term commitment that you've made to the human-animal bond as well.
Well, thank you for those kind words. Dr. Jennifer Quammen, President of the American Veterinary Medical Association. A pleasure to talk to you, and I suspect we'll do it again.
Thank you so much.
Can a pet make us happier? Increasingly, science says you bet. Susan Hartzler writes about this in her most recent book, Teaming Up with Therapy Dog, Skills to Build Healing Partnerships, and she'll be on the radio with us soon enough. Multiple studies from around the world have demonstrated that therapy animals help people in remarkable ways. They can have a profound impact on individuals facing illness, trauma, loneliness, anxiety, grief, and the list goes on. They can boost confidence, especially with children. Their value extends far beyond offering that wagging tail. They become an important part of the healing process. They actually can change lives, even occasionally save lives. It does happen, but the question has always been, how? Why does the presence of a dog seem to reach people when words, medicine, traditional therapies often cannot? Scientists are beginning to better understand that answer. A new study, The Value of Pets, The Quantifiable Impact of Pets on Life Satisfaction, published in Social Indicators Research, suggests that the human-animal bond is far more than simply comforting. Researchers found that living with a pet is associated with measurable increases in life satisfaction, an effect the authors estimate rivals other significant contributors to well-being. While the study doesn't prove that pets cause greater happiness, it adds compelling evidence that companion animals make a meaningful difference in people's lives. And you could say, okay, I knew that, I understand that. But, you know, the more science we have to demonstrate this, the better. Researchers have also documented physiological changes that occur when people and trained therapy dogs interact. Levels of the hormone oxytocin, that's often called the love hormone or bonding hormone, increases in both people and dogs at the same time. Yeah, dogs too, by the way. They get high by helping us. Well, they really don't get high, but the level of oxytocin does increase. And it kind of feels like a high. At the same time, stress hormones like cortisol may decrease. Heart rate, blood pressure often fall. And people frequently report feeling calmer, safer, or more connected when a dog is around. The biological responses help explain why therapy dogs can succeed where traditional medicine and conversation alone may not succeed. We'll talk with Susan Hartzler about all of this and more very soon. The University of Cambridge in the UK confirms that chimpanzees are smarter, perhaps, than we think. Here's what they did, and I hope that John Hansen hears this. Researchers there offered three apes a chalkboard and offered them to offer us investment advice. The same choices were presented to professional investment brokers. Now you know what's coming. If they had real money to invest after 6 months, the chimpanzees would have earned millions of dollars. Those mere humans would have lost around the equivalent of $20,000. Lost money. So who knew the real secret to a bull market is a chimpanzee? We'll talk to you next week. I don't know. We'll talk to you. If I find news, you will hear it if it has to do with animals. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early on WGN.